to think about what is the church, you know, with, as many of us are Lutheran people, or we've come out of congregations of one sort or another, and so our conception of church is usually bread, wine, Sunday school, church council, someone's got to mow the lawn, and make coffee on Sunday morning, and we visit and stand around and call each other up when we get sick, and help each other get married and bury each other. And that's our experience of the church. And this is a different experience of the church in some ways. And so what I'm asking is that your own experience reflect on this, that you try to be open to what is up here, some of the things that I'll read, and not just automatically dislike it for one reason or another, or automatically like it. It's a phenomenon in America. It's extremely influential. Some people say there's a holy war going on in American Protestantism. A holy war. And the war is between Schuller and Roberts and Pat Robertson and the normal church, the regular church, that is Methodists and Presbyterians and Lutherans and Anglicans and the rest. Now, you may or may not think there's a holy war going on. That's one person's opinion. But I ask you to bring your own congregational experience and your own conception of the nature of the church. What is the church? To our discussion. Let's see. What else should be said? Some things about finances, so that we'll understand a little bit about what we're talking about here. We're talking about a group of people. I'll turn this thing back around. We're talking about an electronic phenomenon that is rather expensive. I don't know what the budget of the Lutheran Church in America is, but I think it's about the same as the ALC. I'm an ALC pastor. I know that the budget of the national budget of the ALC is $30 million annually.
A little more than that.
Is it more than that? More like 35?
I think it's going.
Well, the ALC, that's right. You're talking about the LCA.
No, I said the LCA is one more.
All right. 30 is about ALC?
Yeah, 30
million. 30
million.
About 35 million for the LCA.
Close to 38 this year, but I'm not sure.
What we're talking about here is that Robert Schuller's congregation in Orange County has an annual income now of $15 million in that parish. And he's on 100. These figures are at least a year old, so some of this is quite low. But he's on at least 160 television stations. I don't know how many stations Oral Roberts is on, but as of 2 years ago, his budget was $50 million plus. Pat Roberts from 700 Club is on 130 television stations, $58 million plus. PPL Club, this is Jim Baker here. Well, praise the Lord, or people that love it. Some of the literature, they use it both ways. People that love it, they love it. They're on 200 stations, and they have a $50 million budget. Jerry Falwell of Lynchburg, Virginia, Liberty Road Baptist Church, that this is like Schuller, that is, it's an individual congregation. And he's on 320 television stations, and that all these figures are way low. I don't have any statistics on Rex Humbard, and I don't receive information from him. And then I think Billy Graham is in a separate category altogether down here. Mm-hmm. We could discuss why Billy Graham is, if you agree with me, that Graham is in a totally different category than these people, but that's a point of
Just a follow on in terms of dollars, last I got was that's 72 to 75 million.
So this is way low.
Yeah.
I think PTL is up over 100.
Okay. Well, all right. So we're...
You're doing well.
Anyway, what we're talking about here are local congregations, in this case, of Von Schuller's Parish in Orange County, and Jerry Falwell Parish in Virginia, Lynchburg, and with Robertson and Baker, these are different kinds of things. And these are more like talk shows, like 700 PPL, or like a Johnny Carson type show, or the university and the big medical center of the city building and all the rest of that.
Comment, PPL formed out of a congregation.
You did it? From a parish?
It has a congregation back there.
They're also currently in use of financial trouble. They're being investigated.
Now, what I'd like to do is to suggest here that we have at least two different emphases that are on the board, and I divide the emphasis with this old chalk line here, okay? Let me start over here with this. I have here only two of the, only four of the seven or eight that are around. The two that are in one category, I think, are Oral Roberts and Bob Schuller. And I would call these counselors, friends, television counselors, television friends, television pastors, so to speak. Now these, PPL and Jerry Falwell's information here, that's a whole different emphasis. They are also a TV pastor, TV friend, but they are highly political. That is, they have this moral majority report, they have lobbying organizations, they have monthly newsletters that are all about bills that are in Congress, etc. That political emphasis is not found in Oral Roberts, it's not found in Bob Schuller in a blatant, direct, sort of aggressive way. So what I'd like to do is first to look at some of this literature and talk about the television as the TV pastor, as friend, as counselor. It's interesting that the literature from Schuller and from Roberts, I mean, good, all of them, but especially from these people, is extremely, it's very warmly written. Let me read some of this to you. This is Bob, Dear Possibility Center. Here's a letter. He starts with a letter from a person who says, I have had a very lonely life. I feel like I'm here all alone. I do not feel close to anyone. After watching The Hour of Power, I now have a new direction for my life. Thank you, Dr. Schuller. Now he writes, Dear Possibility Center, I am sharing the above letter with you because I want you to know how urgently I need your support right now. So many desperate and lonely people depend on The Hour of Power, and it will be such a tragedy if they go to their television sets on Sunday morning and find that The Hour of Power is no longer on the air in their city. For many lonely people who are sometimes thinking about the possibility of suicide, The Hour of Power gives them a reason for continuing to stay alive. If you have ever been lonely, without a family, and without someone to share your love, then I am sure you will know what I mean. For some individuals, The Hour of Power is the only family they have. That is why I want to send you a special book this month, a book about what it means to love and to be loved in a family. And the book, it's just very, very friendly. I love you, he ends up by saying. And we need each other. Together we can discover new possibilities. In another place he says, I'd be so pleased if I could invite you to my house so that you could be a part of my family. Now, I like you. And I don't know you, but I like you. And if there was some way you could come to Orange County, and come to my living room and sit down with me and the rest of the Schuller family, I would feel good. I'd like it. Okay. I don't think it does us any good to be cynical about that. To say Bob Schuller really doesn't mean that. I mean, I think we need to take this as it's said and to hear what it's saying and to let it inform us, talk about our congregations maybe, or talk about ourselves or whatever. Because obviously it's working. I mean, this makes a difference to people. So the book that he's asking us to look at is a book about himself and about, written by his daughter, Sheila, and it's called My Father and My Friend. Okay. Then, in addition to that, then you know that they just dedicated a cathedral, this glass cathedral in Southern California. And so as a part of that, he said, this came out too, where they were asking people to send $500 in for this little, it's a crystal with a piece of glass on and a nasty chandelier. And then for $500, you had your name or the name of a loved one engraved on that. Let me read though how it's written. Let me hang. Okay. It doesn't say let the architect or the construction company hang. It says, let me hang this in your name from the ceiling of the Crystal Cathedral. Honor the memory of a loved one who was a shining light to you in the past. Pay tribute to a dear friend or relative, etc. And I don't suppose that's really any different than what you do in your own congregations when it's time to have find new pews or some, I don't know, it's slicker maybe, it's nicer paper than
okay.
What I'm suggesting is that this is a very warm thing. We need a sermon. Now you heard Shuler on television, and we could say yes, it's warm and all that, but what we really need to do is to have a television set over here and turn it on now and listen to the content of one of his messages, and then to ask the question, is this Jesus he's talking about, or is it not? In what way does this man preach the gospel over 150 television stations each Sunday morning? And I think that's really the crucial question. It's not whether this is a good promotional technique or whether the letter is one. The really important question is the gospel being preached or is something else being talked about? Now, from your own listening on television, we need to talk about that. Now, in a similar vein, Oral Roberts sends this. And this is also warm and pastoral. The letter starts, dear partner. Okay? It's not dear parishioner or dear member or dear friend, it's dear partner. And then one of the lines is here, I care about you. That's it. I care about you. This is an invitation for us to read a book called The Second Command of Faith. This is the revelation that Roberts received about 6 months ago. His first revelation to heal people, and you saw that in the 50s, remember, as you grew up? You saw Oral Roberts in tent meetings, and then he became more sophisticated as it went on. The Second Command of Faith is something that was revealed to him just about 6 months ago. His first command of faith was years ago when he started healing. The Second Command of Faith is something that is more recent. And the gist of this is that what God is telling him is that he is to tell us that in addition to salvation, there is a second command. And the second command is here. The second command is that in addition to being saved, or in addition to salvation, there is also available to you and me three things. It's sort of like an afterburner on an airplane. Okay? The plane's going along, that is your saved, or whatever, however you want to understand saved. But then there's three bonus blemishes. I'm not trying to be corny with the description, I'm just trying to be descriptive of what he says. Well, the bonuses are that your spiritual, physical, and financial needs can be met. And those are the second command of faith. That in some way, if financially you are captured yet, in some way if you're physically captured or held captive, or spiritually held captive, his second command of faith is an invitation for you to share that with him on this letter, and then you send this to Tulsa, and then it says, I will pray for you, the second command of faith, and you put on your knees. Okay. This is a little pin they sent out. Something good is going to happen to you. About electronic television as pastor or as comforter or as friend or as gospel content or please.
I was thinking before, it's an easy way out because you don't have to do anything except sit there and watch. And it's very easy to send a message and not have to be involved in all the nitty-gritty of what goes on at church.
that the PPL Club currently is the most watched television program in the nation.
Which one?
PPL Club. It has a high, it is on the ratings, it is number one of all watched television programs.
Okay.
And the 700 Club is within the top 10. I don't know what follow-up and these others fall in there in relation to the world turns and all the other stuff. But PPL Club is the number one most watched television program in the nation at this time.
Why?
And there are a lot of people who are members of churches. It's not just ministering to the lost sheep. There are, in fact, probably the majority of the members or people who watch it and who support it are members of Christian churches around the nation.
The research that I have been collecting here for a while indicates that in this article by Jeffrey K. Haddon, who teaches at the University of Texas, Houston or something, Medical School, Texas, indicates that the research that he has done and that he has collected says that the audiences are primarily people that are members of congregations or former members of congregations. Could you say, you want to speak at all to why the PPL Club is ahead of As the World Turns? Or,
I wouldn't put my mind with As the World Turns, but the PPL Club, I watch it regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't catch the whole thing, but I like to get up there. It depends from 6 to 7. I usually get up and after some meditation and prayer and things, I'll turn it on.
Yeah.
And it's just a great uplift for me. I just get a real blessing out of it. Personally, I'm not enlightened by the music so much, and I kind of, we also have the 700 Club, and I'm personally flipping back and forth depending upon who's there and what they're saying, and there's a lot of personal testimony there, which is to me uplifting and edifying.
Okay. You can start your day and watch that and feel stronger.
By all means. Okay.
Anybody else?
I'd like to say something.
Bumping up against others.
Being with others, and you are giving them something, and they are giving you a spiritual sustenance and spiritual aid and help.
Let me ask, from your question, your observation, that this is, you say, this is too easy. Mm-hmm. It's a substitute for congregational life. And you're saying congregational life is very important. Other research indicates that Haddon and others have here, that there is no connection so far discovered between watching this and ever joining a congregation. In other words, there is so far no demonstrable link between this television ministry and any increase in congregational membership. Now, there may be, but so far those people who have been trying to discover that, to see if there is any connection between television ministry and increased participation in congregational life, they so far can't make any connection.
So the people watch, what you're saying, people watch and also active in church, probably.
Well, it is, yes, some of them are active in church. All the research I know says that this television experience does not, so far, statistically lead to their participation in a congregation. You follow that?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean necessarily that they're already members, but it does mean that so far, at least the research indicates that the TV set does not lead to bumping up against each other in a parish. Now that,
great. And then we'll part of membership in the PPL Club, they give you a bumper sticker, which you can, if you want to, put on your car. If you would go and visit parking lots of some of the more fundamental Christian churches, you will find many, many PPL bumper stickers.
Uh-huh.
Personally, for me, it is not a substitute for church at all. I go to two church services Sunday morning, I go to a Sunday evening service, a Wednesday night service, and I get an opportunity. To me, this is just a great supplement. It's another way to add to my daily devotion.
Okay. I've been waiting here for 5 minutes. We'll get right back to you.
No worries.
Okay.
I have the feeling that this is tied up with the different attitudes that people have about what church is and what size means to them. Like, in America, I don't think the electronic church would work in Africa and Europe. I don't think the same message would, I just don't think it would work. I think in America we're very individualistic, and the emphasis between God and the individual person is something that we buy very easily. It feels good to us because our whole history matches that. And I think that primarily, from what I've seen, what the electronic church offers is that feeling good about ourselves and about us and God and this happy, warm feeling. And that as long as we get that, whether it's going to church three times a week, if that's what our church gives us, through fun music and warm music and good whatever, good strokes that way, we'll go for that. And if television gives it to us, gives us that feeling of individual experience, then we'll listen to the television if that's what we're really looking for. And I think that's what Americans are responding to.
You're saying that our whole inclination to privatism and personal well-being and personal good, warm feelings between ourselves and God, or just within ourselves or however, that explains in part this phenomenon.
Oh, that's my personal
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, when I was in the hospital for a couple of weeks, I had chance to watch various kinds of television shows, and including me. I can't tell which was which, but I heard nothing on the theology of the cross here at all in any of them. It was all glory. Mm-hmm. Seems to me it was very one-sided.
What do you mean it was all glory?
Well, it's me and how good I feel without any consideration of anything uncomfortable.
Would anybody else like to speak to the glory team or any?
I've only watched the program twice. Well, I was on internship because my people were watching. I wanted to find out what it was. And I, both mornings that I watched, there was a personality of something who was talking. And the whole introduction, and I thought the notion that the people who were MC, I didn't know the personalities were, was, I felt, an appeal to being on the right team. If you're on the right team, you too will be a success, or this man is a famous lawyer or whatever. And I felt that all of that was an appeal for you too can belong to a winning team. You join us and you'll be on the same team as these winning personalities. And I got angry and turned off.
You were watching Shuler?
I don't know. No, I wasn't watching Shuler. I think it was PPL or maybe it was Kevin. I don't know what I was doing.
Shuler pretty consistently. I've only seen him probably 10 times. But normally there is either a Los Angeles Dodger pitcher or an entertainer and the testimonies from those on Shuler at least are pretty consistently from people that are famous or
John Vincent.
Anybody else want to speak to the glory team?
I think it depends upon where they're coming from, because when they first started, my parents would say, look, it's the church asking for money, and all they could hear out of these was to plead for money, and the ones that are on there regularly every week, that's the fundamental thing that they heard out of them. But being non-Christians now, it is really an outreach and an evangelical thing, because they can say, well, look at somebody that they know the meaning of is a Christian, and it has been an outreach kind of to them. And I think that if you are a Christian, you know, you see it from one perspective, and if you're not a Christian, you see it perhaps as an outreach, and it may have some value along that line. It may not bring people into the church. Maybe it doesn't. It hasn't done it with them, but we can now talk about church without the whole negative thing called money, which is what it always came down to before.
There's two groups of people watching right there. As you said, there's people inside the church who have both positive and negative responses to it. There's people outside the church, and probably they too have positive and negative responses. What's the image of the church that a non-Christian gets from watching Shuler or Robert? What's the image of the Christian faith that that you think the non-Christian sees on the television feed. You're saying that it was a good image for your folks.
There is, especially the specials that are on, that come on like 4 or 5 times a year,
yeah.
And the testimony has been good. But, you know, the people who come on every week and then deteriorate to a money thing, and they hear only parts of the program.
Yeah.
And so, but it has been more positive with these testimonies.
What's the image non-Christians receive from watching Bob Schuller and
The way I see it is if you become a Christian, then everything good will happen to you. Look at this famous person, they're a Christian, and they have wealth, and they have success. And so you just don't mention anything about the world that is bad or any of the problems that you have, just only the good.
Is that your experience, that since you become a Christian, or since you are a Christian, that everything good happens to you?
No.
I think one of the things, one of the images you give to people that are non-church would be that this is a non-institutional thing. And you know, there's skepticism about being an institution,
like Lutheran,
right.
Or
yeah. Methodist, whatever. And you don't trust them because they're all the bureaucracy that goes with it, the money they use to support programs that you don't agree with anyway. And a person who's non-church can hear that and accept kind of a message, and I don't have to worry about the institution that I don't trust anyway.
Right.
This guy can produce.
Yeah. So part of it may be an anti-institutional in general.
Mm-hmm.
But here and then we'll be shooting back.
I want to get back to a question that you asked a while ago about whether we hear, as Christians, whether we hear the gospel being preached in this thing.
Yeah.
When I have watched Robert Schuller, I started watching because he had big musical productions in my nutrition, you know. Then I didn't think that was all that great either after I saw a few things. But the more I heard him preach, I heard someone read scripture or a psalm or something earlier in his services on those early Sunday mornings. But somehow when Robert Schuller got up there, I felt he was preaching Robert Schuller and not too much out of the scripture. Now maybe I was continuing that thing. And then on so many of the other ones, I still end up hearing the law, you know. You must do this and you must do that because we're all such terrible sinners and unless you come around this. And I agree with her back there, that what happens in a person's life who has put such faith in all this and then suddenly one day things aren't going right, then what do you think of yourself?
Or what do you think of Jesus?
Which is maybe the more important question. Yeah. We've got you two and then you and then back. Go ahead.
Okay, two things that we have in your letters that you wrote. Obviously, they read, I'm okay, you're okay. They're using strokes. They're using good strokes, warm strokes, to make these people feel good. And this is something that's coming across. A lot of these people are lonely.
Yeah.
However, they also see the institutional church, us, as being hypocritical.
Because we're not
hurt. Instead of seeing that we're human and we're struggling, you know, and that we need the gospel, and that's why we have it. They see it as being hypocrites because we are not perfect. And so they cannot relate to us. They don't understand. They have not heard the true gospel.
In other words, are you suggesting that you have feet of clay, but Bob Schuller doesn't, and so he's a better model than you are?
That's what they're seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're saying that any neighbor who thinks that Bob Schuller is a better model of the Christian life than you is in trouble, because the perfectionist model will fail your neighbor. But if they get to know you, they know you're a failure yourself.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
But you're a failure within the grace of God, which is a whole, changes your life. So you're saying that having casting your hopes on a perfection model sets yourself up for a big fall.
Big fall.
Okay. Now, back here, please.
In regard to these testimonies that people bring, it is true from my experience that generally, or not always, but generally there are people that have some degree of fame or some degree of a world standard of success, and yet in their testimony they generally share the fact that this did not bring meaning to life, did not bring satisfaction. And a lot of people that are hearing this can relate to that because they have varying degrees of material success and have frustration regarding their life. And then they tell the story of how they came to realize the good news of Jesus Christ and that it put different meaning on it. It doesn't say, I'm wealthy because I came to Jesus, it says, I'm wealthy, but I was unhappy, but the coming to Jesus, I found peace and happiness.
So now I'm wealthy and happy.
I'm at least got a degree of happiness that I didn't have previously. Okay. And that Jesus is the solution.
All right. All right. So you don't hear that kind of crass stuff. You hear people saying, yeah, I was miserable, but I'm not miserable anymore.
I do agree that there is this triumphalism, as some people would label it, regarding the victory that one can have in Jesus Christ that a lot of people in the church don't have.
Yeah.
If they carry around an awful lot of bags of problems because they haven't believed that Jesus for them more than Savior.
Okay. You too. Go ahead.
I don't listen to these very often Sunday morning because I'm doing other things Sunday morning. One of the things I like to do is get to church early because I'm getting ready for the party. That the gathered fellowship is always a great time. That anticipation is one of the most huge church waiting. It's a great time. I'm a pastor, by the way, so I have a little bit of investment there. But one time I did hear Schuller, and it was in talking about the gospel. The one thing I remember was not so much about Jesus, other than he was the greatest possibility thinker the world has ever known. And that's the line I remember, that he was the best and greatest possibility thinker. That even on the cross,
he was
thinking positively. And, I just have a lot of trouble with that.
Okay. Schuller's congregation does not celebrate Good Friday. They will not do that. And it was just recently, it was interesting that it was in the Seattle newspapers, the UPI story. It was really funny. It's back on page 27 or something. And I don't know how it got in there, but somebody in LA picked it up. Bob Schuller's new Crystal Cathedral will not have a cross on it. And it was all over the United States. It was just an objective little statement about there will be no cross on or in this church, because he does not want any controversial symbolism in the church. But then, about 3 or 4 months ago, there was another little thing that said that they did change their mind, and there will be a cross in Schuller's church, but it will be to the far left of the stage. I'm just quoting the Seattle paper. It'll be the far left. Now, you're next, then.
Okay, I don't mean to be a big defender of Robert Schuller, but someone was saying that most of the people who testify, have all success stories. And I just wanted to say that, he does talk about his daughter who had this terrible accident, and Margot Abai or whoever it was, this congressman's wife who died of cancer. So I don't think that you can categorically say that, everyone who, thinks his way has everything roses from then on.
Margot Abai was on?
Yeah.
At one time, yeah.
And she died of cancer?
Right.
Birch Bayh's wife?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember he did, when I'm getting ready for my own church, I turn it on because it's just convenient to watch or to listen to him. And I don't, prescribe everything he says, but I think of those two instances. Where,
yes. The counter, the Los Angeles Dodger pitcher who gets 20 games every year.
And his daughter is permanently disabled as a result of an accident.
Now, you watch that. How do you feel? Now, you watch that. And then you get in your car, right? You get your coat on, and you go in your get in your car,
and a half blocks to church.
And you drive down to First Lutheran on the corner.
Well,
now what happened? How do you feel though?
Disappointed.
Is your pastor doing it?
Sometimes I get more of a message from him than I do from my own pastor, very very honestly. And sometimes I think I don't get as much gospel, from Schuller as I would like to get, by any means. But I think, I don't think he's very, I don't think you can always say that he neglects the gospel. I think sometimes he comes up very strongly.
It passed.
Yeah.
All right. Please, you.
Well, I think the thing that I saw, we have a group of Christian women's club, it's called, which is great. They meet in the afternoon or at noon. They go for lunch and they have their lunch. And then there's always a program and a little thing and then a testimonial. And I only went to a few of them, but I got turned off because every one of them said, I was a Christian. No, I went to church all my life.
Yes.
But until I realized my father was beating me all the time, or my husband drank, and I couldn't stand it any longer, and then I turned to Christ, and then everything was fine for them. And they go around making these testimonials. And I personally feel that it was because they went to church all their life, it wasn't this great awakening with all these tragedies. The ones that I heard always had a tragedy that gave them.
Now, I'd like to get back to what you asked earlier. Why are they so successful?
Okay.
Before we go back to some other discussion.
All right.
I think it's evident in some of the comments made here already that these people have recognized the power of that medium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the business community has recognized this long ago. If you want to sell something, if you want to reach people, you use television. I mean, it has captivated a lot of our minds. That's immediately what people do, is turn that switch on.
Yeah.
So I think the power of the television medium plays a big role in the success of these people. Without it, I don't think we'd see the success of these.
What Haddon here says, they didn't invent television, they just learned how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the other thing is that in addition to the set itself, somebody made an observation to me one time that just as I'm hooked on 60 Minutes or MASH. I mean, I'll watch MASH anytime I get a chance, right? And so in the same way, if you've got your ankle swollen up for 3 weeks or something and you can't get out of the house, these people become kind of compatriots. You know, they're pals. The other factor, yeah, and like an ongoing soap, you know, or whatever, or MASH. The other factor is that when a letter is written, they use computers just like the business world. If the letter is about, I'm having a terrible time with my wife, then it goes in computer bank number 7, send materials relating to family life. If it is, I'm really hurting financially, it goes to computer bank number 12, which is send materials RE finances. And so what like PTL gets 20,000 phone calls a day. Those are categorized by computer and organized by computer. The letters that are sent out, I've got some letters here. It says, it's always first name, dear James and stuff. But I mean, as soon as I would commit to an issue like prayer or money or family or whatever, then the letters would start to speak to that. And all those letters are printed out by computer. The Falwell organization has a $20,000 letter a day capacity. You know, the IBM automatic printers? Just run them out.
They pull out also the paragraphs. No, it's not a form letter that comes back to you, but they have various paragraphs fed into that computer.
Right.
And depending upon what your letter is, it pulls out these various paragraphs.
Yes. So the person on the keyboard only has to punch a few things and then the letter gets typed.
Before we lose it, someone was interviewing one of the people from the Graham organization a few years ago in Minneapolis, carrying a story on it. And this person referred to this process as computerized, personalized answers to your problems. Now think about that for a moment.
But if I'm home alone and my children in Wisconsin don't even write me anymore, you know, and I'm home all by myself, and I need a friend, and I don't care if it's a computer or not, I guess. Any mail is great, you know, even if it's in the Burpee Seed Catalog. Anything is great. And so maybe it feels personalized or something.
I just wanted to ask, I've never, you know, written into any of these or gotten any mailing from them. And I, for example, I can't stand their advertisements for all these little crosses and things that you can get. The Tuller has every Sunday something.
Yeah.
He's you know, wanting to send you, but how are they financed? What sort of letters do they write to get all this money in? Is it a low-key type letter that makes all this money go in?
Yeah, sure. They're all, I can read, they're all over the board here. They're all low-key. Oral Roberts says, Brother Roberts, I am praying for you and your needs. You check that box. The next box is, I am enclosing for the work of your ministry. Falwell gets the biggest money. He just got $250,000 from Jesse Helms, his senator.
as a gift. And he does get fat gifts, but most of them get relatively small gifts. And there's always the, I mean, there's an ever-present envelope. I mean, there's always. There's always envelopes. I want to get to this other side of the board, which is extremely important to me.
The one thing that I think we should look into, and the point I was trying to make, is that they make it simple and they give a response, and we as a church tend to make it complicated and do not respond.
People visit our churches on Sunday, they don't even get a letter sometimes.
And the minister is giving you the third week on the second paragraph and something or another, which you don't even know is in.
That's right. And you could care less.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And a few weeks ago, I was in a congregation, and there were 40 of us on Sunday morning, and I was a visitor, and I didn't get introduced before, during, or after the service. With 40 people, I mean, it was like a living room. It was a big living room, and we were all there to have the Eucharist together. I didn't get introduced. I mean, I didn't like it. And I didn't sign the book either, but I don't even know if I could get a letter. But here, I can get, in 5 days, I can get computerized full-color printouts, you know. That's right.
And a simple answer.
And
a,
yeah.
I mean, like we said, it may lead you the wrong way, but it's a simple answer.
But James, isn't it selfish to expect to be introduced when you come into the church?
I know. Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. At the outset, you said that Billy Graham was in a different category. In what way?
I think Billy Graham's in a different category for a number of reasons. First of all, the Graham organization moves into a neighborhood and they organize with local help. They organize for a rally with the purpose of having people join a congregation. These people do not move into neighborhoods to organize. You participate as a consumer with these folks. You watch the product. You participate with a checkbook and correspondence between the computer back and forth. Graham does a different thing. He goes into Minneapolis or Omaha and he organizes as many congregations as he can, gets all his team working, and if people come forward, then they have all sorts of ways to try to get them involved in congregational life. Whether that's effective or not is a different question. The other thing is about Graham is that, well, that, he, politically he's different too, but I mean that's one difference. Go ahead.
She mentioned something about the simplicity of the approach.
Yeah.
And I like to pick up on that. I love the religion page from the Los Angeles Times. And while I was in Texas, I had friends send me things. You know, they keep clipping out things. And there was quite a bit of news about Schuler over the course of this year because the Crystal Cathedral has been built.
Right.
And one of the things that I noticed is that every time there was an article with a picture, he is always, no matter where he is always in that. In that doctoral gown, with that silly smile on his face. I mean, there's never any chance that, yeah, it's the doctoral, you know, there's never any chance that you not know who he is. And it's always the same image. You don't see him in his old clothes, you don't think he's always, there he is, looking very fatherly and gentle. And I'm simply reminded of Rod McEwen's The Medium is the Massage, and I mean, you just keep getting massaged by the everything that comes out of it.
Let's talk about simple answers, too.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you're divorced, you may never remarry. Simple answer. That's the Bible. You can't read
that.
Yeah. All right. So now what do we do with simple answers like that? Because, I mean, a third of my congregation in San Jose was divorced at least one time, or two or three. Now, what do we do with simple answers in an environment where we are all clay people, like our friend back here? See, I really struggle with simple answers.
I don't, and they're not simple in that they're straightforward. They answer the question the way it wants to be answered. So it's a simple answer, but it's not straight. It's not biblical, but it's the answer that wants to be heard. And I think, you know, that is the fault of it. But nonetheless, that's where we as a church confuse people, because the simple answer, the true answer, and the simple answer are not the same thing.
Okay. We have to move. I think it's important.
Can I finish for our
Grant, yeah.
I should sit in front of you rather than on your blind side. You were saying Billy Graham goes into an area and organizes.
Yeah.
That's the way Oral Roberts got started, long before he was on television.
That's right.
He would have his committee, men from different churches that were involved.
Yeah.
And in the city of Tacoma, as an illustration, but which had a population there at that time, did 150,000, he had no trouble getting a crowd of 10,000 people out to his services in his tent.
Right.
He had a 10,000 people tent at that time.
Yeah.
Finally got a 20,000. So this fellow, Oral Roberts, I've known him for 20 years, known very well. And I'm not pressing any views. But he organized before he ever came into place, and he drummed up terrific crowds of work.
So in that way, he's like Graham?
Yes.
Neighborhood, community organization.
Yeah. Except did he recommend that the people join and become active in their own churches? Oral Roberts, I'm asking.
I didn't hear the question, I'm sorry.
Did Oral Roberts train or help the people go back to their own congregations, or were they simply contributing to Oral Roberts to get his $20,000 capacity tent?
Are you asking, did Oral Roberts urge the people to go back to their own churches?
Yeah.
I don't remember him ever saying that. He may
well,
have,
see, that's what Graham does. That's what you're saying, Graham.
In regard to PTL and 700 Club, you hear constantly, if you listen regularly, go find a Bible-believing church. If you call in and get your name, they will, in what city you're in, if they can possibly do it, they will send a pastor to minister to you on a one-to-one personal basis. They're very strongly emphasizing the need for fellowship in churches, and go find a church.
Okay.
If you don't have one. Or
but that very term is what makes many of us blow our court, because his definition of a Bible-believing church and our definition what the gospel of Jesus Christ is about 180 degrees.
There are doctrinal differences.
It's not doctrinal differences.
He's
it's
the
a little bit more than that.
I want to look at this other side. because it's very important to look at the other dimension, the political dimension of this whole electronic phenomenon. What we have here is Jerry Falwell, Lynchburg, Virginia. Moral Majority Report, and I'm going to read a few things out of that. Here's a book that they asked, and then he's got this thing called Clean Up America. And this is one of his political arms. And if the stationery alone is interesting. Here, you see Jerry's stationery? It's an eagle on the shield. Okay? That's Falwell's stationery. Now, he says this, proudly she waves Old Glory, and you get this pin. Dear fellow American, here's your Old Glory flag lapel pin. I pray you will wear it as a symbol of your love for God and country. America is morally sick and needs God's healing. We who believe in decency, family, the home, and Bible morality, all that is holy and sacred, must do all we can to return our beloved nation back to God. Okay? Return the nation back to where it came from originally. We are in the majority, but we have been silent too long. We Bible-believing, moral majority people. Through radio, television, newspaper, magazines, we will speak out now against three things he mentions. Homosexuals, abortion, and pornography. Those three things. We will ask God-fearing Americans everywhere to support our Clean Up America crusade. I hope you will stand with me in the coming months as I speak out against the sins plaguing our nation. Every month, he goes to a different state capital, Olympia, and then the state capital of Oregon, and then Sacramento, and he's on a 50 capital tour presently with a singing group and everything. Now, he says, do four things. Proudly wear Old Glory here to show you are standing up for fundamental Christian values. Okay, what he's saying is that this
pin means that I stand up for fundamental Christian values. Okay, now that's a connection you may affirm. It's a connection you may call into question, whether or not this flag can say you stand up for fundamental Christian values. In addition, pray for the crusade each week. Join me in the old-time gospel hour radio and television programs. It says nothing about it in church, by the way. Falwell never talks about joining the church, and 700 Club does talk about it. Falwell never mentions that, ever. Back up your right to vote now and join the I Love America Club. Now, when you join the I Love America Club, you get a collector's edition of America's Bicentennial Bible, a Clean Up America... No, I'm just going to read this. Clean Up America Hotline Report, and you'll get Moral Majority Think. And then you get $12 a month. If you pledge $12 a month, you'll get other things to be a part of that on a regular basis. Now, that's... And these letters, too, just like the others, are very personal. Now, that's a sort of a political emphasis. In the 700 Club, the bumper stickers have been mentioned before. And here it is again. What you get is a member of the 700 Club. You get a certificate of membership, a lapel pin, membership card, and a thing called Pat Robertson's Perspective, which is a monthly political newsletter from Pat Robertson about various political issues that are up for vote in the House and the Senate and the Congress and different people who are running for offices. And then in the flame here, this is the monthly newsletter from the 700 Club. Here are more things about politicians and various and sundry things. Now, what I want to read is Falwell's Moral Majority Report here. And this is, they start out on page one with just little vignettes, news vignettes. What, there are about 15 on this page. All of them have one thing in common. They all affirm Republican candidates and denounce Democratic candidates. I vote Republican, I vote Democrat. I'm just saying that what we have here is a pro-Republican thing in Jesus' name, okay? Now, as Republican Christians, you may have some thing you want to say about that, to affirm that, to deny that, whatever. Now, over here, we have a story of a housewife in... Is that a term I use anymore? I'm sorry. Is that okay? No. Well, I don't care if it's used here or not. I don't want to use that term. It's not home. Anyway, this woman is 40 years old. She ran for office in Virginia. She ran for city council, and she came in last. But anyway, what we have... No. She ran for office, and they, what they're saying is to us that this woman is a model of Christian political participation. Now, I mean, you know, I think that's certainly biblical, don't you? That we're supposed to involve ourselves in the life of our community. This woman did it. She lost her election, but that's not the point. They're saying, now this woman's a model. Now I want to read this here. Her name is Mrs. Ribble. Mrs. Ribble's political involvement began with her work as co-chairman of a group called Citizens Against Unacceptable Sex Education. Her experience in this anti-pornography campaign convinced her that she needed to take an active initiative in politics. And then she goes on and says, it's time, she says, to pick up the sword. John Howard Yoder, it's time to pick up the sword. Okay, now that's one article. Now, this is a real interesting one. This man is his name is Richard Dingman, and he is director of the Republican Study Committee in Washington, D.C., the former administrative assistant to John Conlon. John Conlon's a congressman from Arizona, and John Conlon, there's another organization in the United States called Christian Voice, and Christian Voice gives report cards on people in Congress. In other words, if you get 100, it means Christian Voice endorses everything you voted for. If you get 0, it means you've got to be kicked out of office. George McGovern has a rating of about 7 or 8 or so, any of you from South Dakota. Conlon has a rating of 98, 99. Orrin Hatch, a Mormon from Utah, gets from the organization called Christian Voice a perfect 100 rating, by the way. Well, I think it's what we've got going here, see, is an interesting political move that calls, that makes us ask the question, what is the relationship between Jesus and Washington, D.C.? What's the relationship between church and state? Not a simple question. Okay? Let me read this. It is a fact of life that most of those who adhere to a conservative theology also adhere to conservative politics. That's Dingman. And that really, that statement reflects Jerry Falwell and reflects 700 Club and etc. That conservative theology, whatever, I don't know what conservative theology means. That's a real problem. You that have been reading with John Schramm, John Howard Yoder, would have to conclude that John Howard Yoder is an extremely conservative man. John Howard Yoder opens his Bible and reads, Jesus says, don't hurt anybody. So John Howard Yoder won't hurt anybody. He is a literalist from the word go, as far as the Bible is concerned. Did you sense that as you were reading? The man, he simply won't hurt a soul. He will not pay any money to have anybody else hurt anybody else. He is a fundamentalist in a real sense of the word. Everything Jesus says, he does. The guy is just irritating as the day is long. He's a very fundamental guy. Yoder's got a, I don't know if John said this, but Yoder hasn't been paying war taxes for years. And he has got an entire file cabinet just of correspondence with the Internal Revenue Service. He is hounded constantly because he doesn't want to hurt anybody. And he says to himself, if I give my money, then they're going to build a bomb and they're going to drop it on somebody and somebody's going to get killed, and Jesus knows he wants me to do that, so I won't do it. So anyway, he's got this huge file back and forth. IRS attaches his wages and everything is a constant battle. But anyway.
Doesn't he pay taxes for educational?
Oh yeah, he pays that part of his tax.
How can he designate?
He just figures out the percent of the budget that's for defense and he won't pay it.
I see.
He has been doing that for 25 years or more. Years and years. So he's constantly in trouble. But anyway, Dingman, I just ask you to ask the question, is Dingman right right here when he says that those who are conservative politically, those who are conservative theologically always end up being conservative politically? That's an interesting thing. Now Dingman says something, you've heard of National Council of Churches. For years, Dingman's got a good point here. He says, for years, the National Council of Churches has been very political. He says, okay, the liberals in America can be involved in politics, saying increase food stamps, increase welfare payments, increase payments to education, all that, all those liberal causes. Why can't conservative Christians be in politics? Does he ask a good question? I think he does. Listen to this.